Hey everybody, and welcome back to Fire Keeper's Memories. We're so glad that you're joining us again for another week, another story, another pair that we're sitting down with this week to listen to these ordinary folks with incredible stories. So, hey Pat.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing great. You know, the weather's nice. Can't complain. The last days of summer.
You should be sore.
Oh, right.
Be complaining a little bit.
Right. This will right? be.
You're heading to Hawaii soon.
I'm heading to Hawaii on Thursday. So by the time, though, that the listeners hear this, I'll have already completed trifecta. So
that's a really good point. Maybe I should say it another
time. Nope, that's okay. So we record early. Here's the big secret. We record a little bit early, so Pat's referring to my crazy decision to run a Spartan Beast in Hawaii that I'll be leaving for shortly. And so by the time you hear this, hopefully I'll have completed it and I will still be alive to tell the tale. So that's the plan.
You will be. And I feel a lot less nervous now that I remember again that this isn't live. That's helpful.
We do remind him every week.
Every couple times a show. Relax.
Relax, Pat.
It's not live.
We can edit it out. It's okay. Yeah. It's not like a real campfire in the sense that once you say it, you can't take it back. Mm-hmm. But usually at a real campfire, people have had enough to drink that they don't remember it anyways.
Yeah, in both places, people can save it to use against you later, I suppose.
It's true.
That's probably.
Well, you know, what happens around a fire. So yeah. We are joined today by... two people who are transplants to our beloved hometown, but have made it their own, and it feels like they've always kind of been there. So I'd like to welcome Alejandra and Sean Finn. So welcome.
Well, thank you.
Thanks for coming in. Thanks for making the trek over here from the metropolis of Buchanan, driving all the way over here to our recording studio in Bridgman. How's it going?
Very good.
Good, good. Well, the reason why I brought you in today is we want to talk about your story. We on Firekeeper's Memories, you know, the point is to have these conversations with people and the whole idea that everybody has a story to tell if you just ask them. I learned about your guys' story. We were just talking about this before we put our headphones on a couple of years ago now. It doesn't feel like that long ago, but I used to write a blog called Laying Down Roots. And on this blog, I would kind of tell stories about what was going on in our town, kind of similar to this, but just in a written format. And I was talking with my dad, and he said, you know, you got to talk to these people out on Coveney Road. I mean, they started this farm. They do this organic farming, and they got this really cool story. I just talked to Sean for like hours. He told me all about it. So you got to go out and talk to them. So I made a trip out to the farm and got a tour and sat down, and a few hours later had enough material to write an article about. And so that's why you guys are here, because I want to recount this story, and I want Pat to hear about it and all the rest of our listeners to hear about this interesting story. So let's start from the beginning and maybe just tell us a little bit about yourself without giving too much of the story away yet.
Well, Alejandra and I met from being in the flower industry for many, many years, and she lived in Bogota, Colombia, where they grew flowers, and I would buy carnations from her. And she'd come up and visit a couple times a year, you know, kind of doing her normal sales calls. And that's how we met.
You guys were living, you were in the Chicago area, right?
I was in
right?
Chicago, and she was in South America. And you so we dated a couple years, you know, long distance. That's a little bit longer distance than most people,
I think. That's a real long distance. And, that was before Skype.
It probably.
You know, and before FaceTime.
Google, before Google. And
oh, man.
The phone bills were very expensive.
So you would travel there and stay for extended periods of time for work?
No, not really. I mean, no? I didn't go down there until we actually started dating, I don't think. Really? She would mostly come here.
Oh, okay.
We actually will meet kind of halfway, because I will have to travel for work. Because all in South America, the floral industry is really big. Mm-hmm. So thank you so much for everybody that buys flowers. Mm-hmm. They all come from Colombia, or the majority. So I will have to come to trade shows, let's say LA, Miami. So we'll kind of meet halfway. Mm-hmm. So that was a very interesting dating period.
Do you remember when you first met?
In person?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just she had come up you know, for probably a show, and then, you know, made some visits to customers and stuff. Mm-hmm. So she just, you know, really walked in the door with, I think your boss was with you at the time, mm-hmm. you know, just to kind of check out the warehouse and meet us and stuff.
Okay, I've been in the floral industry for many years. So I don't want to say how many. So I just had started a new job. I used to work with a company that originally they just will buy from farms and export it. And it was kind of like the middle guy. Mm-hmm. Then this farm hired me. And it was kind of like my first trip to meet the customers of this new farm.
Gotcha.
So the company that he used to work for was one of the most important customers for the farm. So we had to come visit them and mm-hmm. see their operation and see how it worked. So I met him probably 2 years before we really started dating.
Sure. Well, sometimes it takes that long. You know, did he just wear you down?
So it was like meant to be.
Right. So you sold the flowers. You purchased the flowers.
Yep.
Okay. And then you purchased the flowers for a company then that sold them where?
Yeah, we were wholesale. So we would buy all the flowers, mm-hmm. you know, from South America and from mm-hmm. California, all over mm-hmm. the world, actually. And we would sell them to retail flower shops mm-hmm. and grocery stores, you know, the different outlets for anybody that would buy flowers, sure. you know, the consumer. Mm-hmm.
What do you give a woman for her anniversary if she's in the flower business?
That's a really good question.
I'm going to tell you. Really, he knows.
Not flowers.
Not flowers. Or jewelry, uh-huh. amazingly.
Because she used to sell jewelry. Oh, so,
okay. At some point. But
that
I
got
will
me
say,
off the hook there.
No kidding.
But really, a gift certificate to a spa. That is my favorite gift ever. Oh, a maid service.
Oh, both of those. One. You cannot go wrong with either of those gentlemen who are listening.
Yes.
Take note. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So awesome. So you guys meet and then you continue on with the flower industry, right? You get married where you live in the South
in
Chicago.
Yep, mm-hmm. on the south side of Chicago. Okay. And I was still in the wholesale. And actually, Alejandro worked for our company for a little while. Mm-hmm. You know, some different, not directly with me, but, you know, some mm-hmm. other parts of the company. And then she eventually... Well, actually, no, you didn't get your job that you're working with now until after we moved out here. So, yeah, she kind of just, well, you did a few different things. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, we continued, obviously, in the flower business.
Yeah.
And then my company bought out another company, and they were talking about transferring me. So mm-hmm. that's kind of how we ended up out this way.
Gotcha. So they were going to transfer you to where? South Bend area?
To South Bend.
Okay. Yep. Mm-hmm. So then fast forward to that.
So, all right, so we made the decision, which was kind of a tough one. Alejandra, who's lived all over the world, many different places, could care less where she lives. She's, I'll go wherever, I don't care. Mm-hmm. I grew up on the south side of Chicago, and my whole family still lives on the south side of Chicago, so it was a very difficult decision.
Okay, parentheses, they never move out. It is very hard to get somebody from the Chicago south side Irish uh-huh. cluster
yes.
to get out of there.
Yeah. Mm.
So that was a tough decision.
Yeah. Now, did you have to have an entire family meeting on that decision? Were you allowed to make it on your own? Did you have to consult with everyone else in the neighborhood?
I think it was kind of a family thing, you know, and my one particular sister she wants everybody to stay very close.
Sure.
Christmas has to be done this way, and mm-hmm. all the holidays need to be done this way. Mm-hmm. And when things change like that, she gets very upset. So I knew talking to her about it was going to be a tough one. But I think ultimately, when we first started looking for houses, we were just kind of looking in Indiana mm-hmm. and not really thinking about, we never thought about the whole farming thing when we were doing that. It was all right, you know, we'll find, you know, a nice house on an acre of land and whatever. We'll just go about the flower business. Mm-hmm. And we weren't really finding anything we liked in Indiana. So we kind of crossed the border into Michigan and we were just driving around one day and happened down Coveney Road. And
just describe Coveney Road.
It's dirt road out in the middle of nowhere, very hilly, and it's just
woodsy.
It's beautiful. It's uh-huh. just a beautiful area.
Yep.
And just the landscape changes when you cross over into Michigan. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. And we just were driving down the road, and there was a for sale sign out in front.
And so I told him that's the house.
We made a phone call and saw it that day. We were, you know, in town from Chicago, just mm-hmm. driving around looking for houses. Mm-hmm. So
The house was not even in the listings that we were kind of looking. We were just driving around. And just seriously, it's like the house just appeared. Mm-hmm. Well, we just turned in that beautiful dirt road with all the woods and the trees and the landscape. It was magical.
Mm-hmm.
And there was this blue house, especially because not all the houses all around here are white.
Yes.
So it was a blue house. And it would just look so charming. And then Sean didn't want a regular house, you know, regular house, cookie cutter house. He's like, I want a little bit of land. I don't want to live in a subdivision. Mm-hmm. I want a little bit of land. So that little bit of land ended up in 14 acres that we were never thinking right. of living with that much land. But it just happened. It all fall into place.
Yeah. So you call the realtor. She comes out.
Literally within an hour.
Mm-hmm.
She was there, saw the house, and I mean, I think we fell in love with it right
mm-hmm.
away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was turnkey ready.
Yeah.
So, and the house is a beautiful story because it was not just a regular house that was built there. It was a cabin, and then they did an addition, and then they really built the house.
So it's a very old home.
It's,
you know,
the original
cabin. The original yeah. cabin that is today our guest bedroom. So,
yeah.
And we loved, especially. Those are the things when you move from Chicago and then you know that you're going to have family visiting.
Mm-hmm.
It was very important to have a good space for the family to come visit, that mm-hmm. they will feel comfortable coming and not like on top of the family that you will need to kick a kid out of their bedroom because grandma and yeah. grandpa are coming. Mm-hmm. So we wanted the family because it's not just the Chicago family. It's my Colombian family has come. We've been mm-hmm. very lucky because probably I will say we've been here 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Out of those 5 years, probably 4 out of 5. Somebody has come to visit us
mm-hmm. from South America. And they'll like stay for a month. Haven't we?
No, 5. It
we
feels more.
About that. So it sounds like you haven't lived in a rural area before.
No, I grew up in the city of Chicago. Well, on yeah. the south side, it's rural compared to downtown, but that just means the houses are 30 feet apart instead of
yeah, right.
2.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. But Alejandra, did you grow up in a rural setting or did you grow up in the city?
I grew up in the city of Bogota. So that's a city, like
yeah.
8 million people.
Right.
A lot of traffic.
Mm-hmm.
So although my family, at some point of our lives, we lived outside of the city, like
okay.
what we'll call it a suburb type of thing, mm-hmm. where it was a little bit more with more land. Because my parents at this time, they live outside of the city of Bogota. Close mm-hmm. to it, but not in the city
mm-hmm.
yeah.
because they like, you know, the grass and the greenery. Bogota is a very hectic city.
Yeah. Well, you both were in these professions with very, a lot of, you know, agricultural, I guess it was agricultural industry, but no, it was.
It's more the commercial part of it.
Industrialized commercial part of the floral.
Yes.
Yeah, so, sales. I mean, really, it was, you know, sales and, you know, purchasing and logistics.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what was it like to be in the country and have maybe a coyote howl one night or
was you know as a kid and you know growing up and my grandparents always had a place in the country, you know, up in Wisconsin. My mom was actually from Wisconsin and my dad's mom was from Wisconsin, so 3/4 of our family, you know, was in Wisconsin. So as a kid, you know, people would have cabins and
yeah.
You know, I would spend a lot of time, you know, especially in the summer, outdoors. So I always loved the outdoors
mm-hmm.
and, you know, hunting and everything else. And my brother went to college with, you know, a bunch of guys from Central Illinois, and that's all they do. So, you know, yeah. I'd go down there and they were all farmers and, you know, kind of fell in love with, you know, the farming part of it, you know, just kind of through okay. them. Never expected to do it still at the point mm-hmm. where we decided to, you know, make the move and come out here that was really the furthest thing from our mind.
Mm-hmm.
Even as we were looking for houses, we weren't thinking about that.
Mm-hmm. And you had the boys by then,
yep.
right?
Yes.
So talk a little bit about them. How old were they when you guys made the move here?
Okay, Nico was in the middle of first grade, and Matthew was in preschool.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know.
Yeah. So luckily it wasn't too difficult of a transition for them because they were still kind of young.
They were still kind of young,
yeah.
yes.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was fun. It was... it's like a little vacation because at that time we didn't have the functioning farm that
right.
we have today.
Right.
You know, we thought that Sean was going to work for the rest of his life in the floral industry
uh-huh.
and that he was going to retire from the floral industry. And while we made the move and I was looking for a job, one of my previous customers that is in Chicago called me and offered me a job out of the blue. I'm like, I do not live in Chicago anymore. Are you open to a telecommute position? Mm-hmm. And the owner of the company said yes. So I've been working for 5 years with this mm-hmm. company in Chicago, and I'm the floral buyer. So I buy all the flowers for all the stores, and I work a few days in my house from mm-hmm. home, and the other days I go to the stores physically. Mm-hmm. I drive to Chicago three mm-hmm. times a week.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, you are no longer in the floral business, so you move here. How long are you still in your job? Did you move to this new location? And then
2 years?
So how does, like a year and a half.
Yeah, a year and a half to 2 years.
Okay. So then how does that happen? How does the transition happen? Because this is where the story gets real good, right?
Right, yeah. I'm retired now.
Yes.
No. What happened was that when we moved to this house and when we have the property, one of my sisters-in-law says to Sean, now that you're here, why don't we get a cow for the family? And then Sean says, I don't know. And then the lady from work says, just get a cow and I'll buy it from you. So I'm like, it will be fun, you know? So he fences the one part of the land, and we bought 4 feeders. This is without having no idea about anything.
You bought 4 cows.
4 little cows.
Well, okay.
We got to take a step back, because when we bought the house, we bought like 20 chickens from the previous owners.
Oh,
so we thought it would be fun.
That was where we really started.
It was
with the chickens.
With the chickens. 20 chickens.
So it was really turnkey. Like, they left everything plus the chickens.
Right. And the riding lawnmower, too.
Yeah.
The riding lawnmower.
That's Southwest Michigan turnkey. You get the furniture, the lawnmower, and any livestock that is on the property.
Have either of you had chickens before?
Never. No.
No. So did you go get... We asked Chickens for Idiots,
the book.
You know what? We asked the previous owners, what do we do? And they're like, nothing, just give them food and pick up the eggs and wash them with warm water and enjoy.
Is it that simple?
Yeah. And then just clean out the chicken coop, it really stinks.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Uh-huh. So you get the 4 cows, and then what?
All right, so basically, before we got the cows, the biggest thing was you have to put up something to contain them.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that would probably be my biggest learning experience at that point, was how to put up fence. And I'd say, you know, from there, that being my really first thing I learned about farming,
mm-hmm.
A lot of things have kind of followed that same path. And basically, I guess my formula for that is do some research, look online, find out what options are out there, mm-hmm. and then try to put yourself in contact with people that have had the same experiences doing those things. So I guess, you know, kind of over the last few years, I've made a lot of friends and, you know, people that I would consider mentors at this point, that helped me out with a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's kind of how, I guess, just kind of the way I learn is I learn, one, you know, do some research. You know, find out, you know, what's available, mm-hmm. you know, what different options you have for that particular project, you know, talk to some people that know a little bit about it, and then just jump in and do it. And I'm more, you know, hands-on, mm-hmm. you know, you learn you're going to make some mistakes, and the mistakes are going to cost some money, but that's why you start out small, and you make smaller mistakes instead of, you know, starting out big mm-hmm. and make huge mistakes. So put up the fence, got the cows. At the beginning, we didn't know anything about the whole organic thing or anything, so we were just feeding them corn and hay and, you know, just kind of doing it like that.
Mm-hmm. And so the purpose of the cows was to feed them and then for the family?
Mainly for the family. Yeah. And then, so we have 2 extra cows, and then somebody else, actually from the neighborhood, our friend Joyce, bought part of a cow. And then we have extra meat, and they're like, oh, we started selling it. And, that's how it really started. And then we did, I remember, 1 farmer's market in the winter. That was our first farmer's market. We brought our eggs. Yeah. And the Union Church, mm-hmm. it was in a winter indoor market in our old neighborhood in Beverly. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, kind of like we just started doing these little smaller farmer markets in the neighborhood. And the first year that we had way more meat and more things, we started doing more solid, like, summer markets, and that's when...
I think what we really tried doing at first was we did a couple of those little, what they call pop-up markets. It's not mm-hmm. something that's a regular steady thing.
Yeah.
And then what we were trying to do at the beginning was try to sell to family and friends and try to get the word out like that. And then that kind of turned into doing a little more, you know, like Facebooking and marketing like that. And then we started to go into some like CrossFit gyms. And, you know, we'd spend a couple hours in there on a Saturday morning and, you know, just talk to people. And so it was just, it was a really slow start. But
asking them what they wanted and
just ready
to trying to, trying to get, you know, some just regular customers, you know.
So when did it, do you remember a moment where you started thinking, I could just do this. I could just stop this other stuff that I'm stressed out about or overwhelmed with, and I could do this.
Right. Well, it kind of, it went from, you know, as we were kind of trying to do the selling end of it, and then we started finding out about, you know, the genetically modified products and the whole organic, you know, movement that was going on that we really never looked at or thought much about. But, you know, we started, we would talk to people about our product and they'd ask us if it was organic, if it's non-GMO. And, you know, we're like, well, no, it's not. Why? And then you start looking into, you know, what's going on that side of the world. And, you know, you start, I guess it's kind of one of those things. Hey, you know what? Go and check out this farmer's market that's over there and see there's a couple of guys selling meat. See what they're doing. You know, what? Ask questions, talk to people, find out what's going on. Then you start to see, well, you know, that stuff they're doing organic, look at the kind of prices they're getting on that. You know, and but why are they doing it? The question is, why are they doing it? And why is it, why do people think it's more healthy and what are the reasons for it? And, you know, you look at all the chemicals that go into the, you know, commercially conventional crops and stuff, and it kind of, that's an eye-opener. So that's when we kind of started going that route and seeing the opportunities in the products that we could raise, not only, you know, healthy for our family, but there's an opportunity here to where we could almost make a business out of this.
And did you see, obviously this was happening at a time where that whole organic food was exploding, and then a lot of your base was from your neighborhood, right? That's kind of where it started, and so you saw quite a bit of demand in the Chicago area for this type of product, and then you started delivering, right? So they could have you know, a weekly pickup spot that they could count on, so they could place an order, and then you would deliver to
them. And that was kind of why we started going around to the gyms, and those became drop off points for us. You know, so once we, you know, we spent several months going, you know, even in a couple health food stores, we'd go in there and spend an afternoon in there and, you know, just kind of try to drum up regular business. And then once we kind of got, you know, kind of got some of that under our belt, then we got some regular customers and we would just leave our information there and we start getting calls and people would order. And we'd just, every Wednesday, we'd go there and drop off at a certain time and the customers would pick up, you know, at their convenience until, you know, the hours were whatever, that they closed.
Yeah.
So.
Now, you were both still in the floral industry when you started this.
Yep. Yeah. We're still both working full-time.
Having two boys at home.
Yep.
Back here in Buchanan.
Playing sports.
Everything else. And then now starting this side business. Did you have nights where you kind of lay in bed and you're like, can you believe we're doing all this stuff?
It still happens. It still happens. It's It is very overwhelming. It's a lot of work. A lot of little sleep, and it's the team effort. The boys work very hard at the farm. They do chores morning and night. Before they go to school, they do chores. When they come back from school, they do chores. They help a lot. They are great, great helpers. The bigger the markets are getting, the more demanding it becomes, because you need to make sure that you have enough product to cover your sales. And it's not like, it's not so easy.
Sure.
You need to plan ahead. And I think that's where the background of the flower industry comes in handy. Because you need to plan for Valentine's Day. You need to plan for Mother's Day. So Sean is really good. I really hats off to him, because I couldn't do it on my own. I tell him, you need to take care of yourself, because I can't do this on my own. It is very, like today, before we came here, he was talking with something about the chickens, the butcher, cows. So it's a lot of, there's a lot of moving parts from getting the cows to grow and take them into the butcher, and they take like 2 weeks at the butcher. Mm-hmm. So you need to plan ahead so you have enough product at the markets to supply your customers mm-hmm. and bring yeah. the right type of product. So yeah. it's all...
And the product is a living product.
Yeah, although... yes, you absolutely. Know, so... It's although it's... The meat is frozen,
yeah.
but you need to have the right combination
yeah.
of products, of meats.
Yeah.
How far? The one bonus from going from the flour industry, mm-hmm. where you're dealing with a very perishable product, to this, to where it's a perishable product, but I can take it to the market in a freezer mm-hmm. and bring it back home and take it back to the market, and I don't lose anything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's the one part of... You know, I'm used to dealing with perishable products, but this one lasts longer, so I like mm-hmm. that part of it.
Yeah.
Too. Not many frozen roses.
There's no frozen roses, yeah. and you have to sell them right now, immediately.
Yes.
Yeah, you basically have a 5-day yeah. window. You have to get rid of it, right?
Yeah. Hmm. So you get the 4 cows, and again, you're not really sure what you're doing. And I remember from the story, the part that I love too is where you would start to get different animals and more animals, and coming from a guy that had never farmed before, now you're jumping into the farming industry, and you would meet friends, right? You go down to the co-op and ask them what they were doing. So this, I think, really speaks to the whole idea of like there is still this small town, you know, vibe of people helping each other and farmers helping each other. So talk a little bit about that, like your experience of going down and just asking other farmers.
There's, you know, in Buchanan, I mm-hmm. think they still do it in the winter on Saturday mornings. But I'm at the market usually, so yeah. I don't get down there very often. But yeah, I just go down to the hay auction, you know, down at the feed mill in Buchanan, and you know, just start talking to guys that are making hay. And I met a very good friend of mine now. His name's Charles. He's actually from La Porte, but he's like my mechanic. If I ever have any questions, if I need extra hay, you know, we just started making hay last year for the mm-hmm. first time, which has been just a whole new experience, but he's got a ton of experience making hay, and mm-hmm. he knows all the equipment. So, you know, just little things like that. You know, I met him down there, and I met a bunch of other guys there. And I got another good friend over in Niles that helps me with a lot of stuff. And then it's just all the people in the neighborhood, your dad. And, mm-hmm. You know, a great friend of mine, Ron, that lives a couple doors away. And he helps me with everything on the farm. You know, he does a lot of the hay and stuff. And we got another neighbor, Ann, that comes over and helps me trim the goat's hooves. And I mean, it's just, you know, it's just the neighborhood.
Yeah.
Everybody's so helpful. It's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. So you said goats. All right. So you had chickens, you had cows. Then what happened?
Then we got more cows.
Then you got more cows.
And more chickens.
On pigs.
Yeah, then we added pigs. And
turkeys,
ducks.
Well, duck eggs.
Yeah, we can't have enough duck eggs ever. So
they're doing
that's
well.
Become huge. Yeah,
yeah.
Duck eggs.
Huh.
Yeah, if we could have 500 more ducks, we'd be in good shape. But the problem with ducks is they lay eggs just kind of wherever.
Oh,
they're very disorganized. Come on,
guys, so we've got a business to run here.
Right, yeah.
We find duck eggs all over the property. It's like an Easter egg hunt. Seriously.
Because they're free range.
Yeah. They're free range. Yeah. They're all over the place. So,
but the chickens are more organized. Chickens will lay the eggs in the chicken coop and then go out.
So polite.
Ducks
then.
Just go out and, you and know, when they're ready to lay the egg, just wherever they're standing, it drops.
Just rude. Just rude.
Yeah. So seriously, that sometimes I'm coming in the driveway and I see 2 or 3 eggs in the middle of the driveway.
That was just, nice. At least you'd just step in just, front, you know.
Uh-huh. Step up and I'd pick them up. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, but then we started getting demands for lamb.
Mm-hmm.
So we added some sheep, of course. And then, which I was kind of surprised, we started getting people asking about goat. And it's like, goat, that's kind of weird. But what as soon as I heard that, I went to the internet, checked it out, and found out that goat is the most consumed meat in the world. Mm-hmm. I had no idea. I'm like, well, geez, if that's the case, then we need to get in on this.
Alejandra, order some goats.
And that's how you start making all this contact. So mm-hmm. who is producing goats? So then we need to get a ram, and we need to get some goat.
A goat's a buck. A ram's the sheep.
Oh, the sheep. Okay, I get them all confused.
I would too.
You can see. We had a lot of babies this this spring. We had baby goats and lambs. Aww. It was our first experience with a little babies, and it was not easy.
Well, last year we had a few, but weather was really nice last year, and there weren't any issues. This year, when they started having them, we were getting like the freezing rain, and it was just the weather was horrible. It was cold, so we had to build some stuff inside to get them all inside, and it was.
Well, we bottle feed a few, like every day, like babies. We have to bottle feed them because they will lose either their moms or the mom will have twins, and she wouldn't have enough milk for the two babies, so you have to take one and start bottle feeding him so the mom can feed the other one. So it was a learning experience for all of us.
I was going to say, those are probably the times you have to start calling people and asking lots of questions.
Absolutely.
Staying up 2 in the morning.
And Facebook was helpful, too, because I'd just throw something on, like, the Berrien County Facebook farm pager, and I just say, hey, I'm having this issue. And then I'd get a bunch of people that it would answer. And I've met a couple, you know, friends off of that raise goats and raise sheep. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the one girl comes over and she shears all my sheep in the spring, you know, so that's awesome. Mm-hmm. And she also has helped me, you know, trim hooves and stuff. So,
yeah.
We didn't know that you have to trim the hooves on the sheep and the
goats.
Right? So we had no idea. So when they went up, the sheep and the goats were like all limping. And I'm like, they're limping. Oh, then you figure it out that you have to trim them. So
it hurts them,
apparently, if you don't
it's
trim
awkward.
Them.
Like if you walk like on
your long nails.
It's like I need your own nail.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Right.
So when did you, in what part of all of these animals did you decide to say, all right, I'm all in?
I think once we figured out that there was truly, because we're both from the sales end.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we, you know, our whole lives has always been kind of in sales and, you know, sales and marketing. So as we, you know, kind of started into this and we're getting more comfortable with the farming end of it and started finding out, you know, there's some pretty big companies out there selling at these farmers markets in Chicago that are doing some great things. So we started doing the research on the farmers, the actual like true farmers markets. And we started doing, the first year we did one. And then the second year we maybe did two. And then realized, all right, you know what? This is something we can make some money doing this. And it took a lot of convincing on Alejandra's part to convince me to even consider quitting my job. She's like, she's a lot more daring than I am.
It sounds like you're the planner. So you would have, I imagine, be the one putting the numbers together
right
on this. But you're the one, Alejandra's saying.
You need to go with your gut sometimes.
Yeah.
And stop thinking so much. And he was not happy with what he was doing. Mm-hmm. And I think you need to really enjoy what you do in order to make it, you know, it's something that you wake up every day and you have to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Why make it miserable? And things were not going the right way. And the farm was really taking off. And it was in this teeter-totter moment of either you take the quantum leap of faith and put all in this opportunity that life is presenting you. And I told him, what is the worst that could happen? Let's say it doesn't work. Yeah, money, it's money. You know, everybody has lost money. So who cares? So then you'll go find another job. It's not the end of the world. And actually, I was asking him today, what would you prefer? Because we're pretty overwhelmed. There's a lot going on. And there's not enough hours in the day to get everything done. And I told him, would you prefer having this crazy life where there's not enough hours in the day or go back to your old job? And he's like, oh, no, I keep this one.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, because when you love what you do, right?
Absolutely,
I mean,
yeah.
It's not work. It's more of a passion that you're following.
Totally.
And even though it is hectic and crazy, and it's your hectic and crazy.
Right. And, you know, going back to the kids a little bit, the kids, every time you tell them to do something, you get the roll of the eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Dad, really? And I think back and it's like, I ask a lot of the kids. They do a lot around the farm.
Mm-hmm.
But I had the same reaction when I was told to do the dishes or take the garbage
out.
And I'm like, oh, God, did I have it easy? And these guys have it, you know, a little bit more difficult, but... the things that I look back and appreciate that my dad did for me when I was growing up, they'll appreciate this someday. Right now, it's just like any kid being asked to do a chore, whether it be the garbage, you know, dishes, anything. But I think with the experiences that they're given on the farm, they'll be much further ahead than I ever was, you know, going into high school, going into college, whatever it is. their ability to be able to just, you know, make decisions and fix things and it, just anything, just mm-hmm. everything that happens on the farm, just problem solving in general, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's just awesome. It's an awesome experience for them. And I think that part of it drives me just as much as anything else. Yeah. Just, you know, watch. What was it? Yesterday we had something, and or maybe it was even today. Matthew was doing something. Matthew's our youngest, and he wasn't quite sure how to do it. I think it was yesterday. He was taking a seat off of a big wheel. We were at my parents' house, and he was all bunched up on it, like the seat was up too far. I said, "Well, I'm guessing that you could probably move it back." He said, "Well, I don't know how to do it." I said, "Well, turn it over and look at it and figure it out." So he flipped it over, and there were a couple little wing nuts on there, and he said, "Okay, I got it." And Mom walked by, and she looked at me. She said, "Well, why don't you help him?" I said, "Well, because then he's not going to learn. He needs to do it himself." Mm-hmm. And that just translates to that was done in the city of Chicago. But that's just things that I do out at the farm. Mm-hmm. Figure it out. "Dad, I can't do it." "Figure it out. It's too heavy for me." "Well, okay, if it's too heavy for you, you physically can't do it, what would you have to do so you can do it? Make it lighter. Okay, split it in half." Stuff like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, such valuable skills that so many kids these days aren't able to acquire.
Struggle. Without struggle, there isn't any growth. And mm-hmm. you sat him there with a problem. He looked at it. He struggled for a second or two, and it's probably familiar to him. You know, he's seen wing nuts on the farm.
I'm not going to do it for together. You need to figure it out.
And he did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I want to give an example of something that I was kind of like really proud. One of the pigs was having struggled. The pig was not getting off the floor, and we didn't know what was happening. And Sean was not home.
Probably in Chicago.
So the boys took a pallet, lifted this heavy pig that was probably 300 pounds.
It was probably 150.
Well, whatever. But it was really heavy.
Facts can really get in the way of a good story.
Anyway, so...
Dang it.
3,000 pounds.
It was big.
It was a big pig.
It was a big little pig. Kids.
They lift the pig, put him on top of the pallet so the pig is not sitting on the ground. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, they need a blanket for the pig.
Aww.
And we're talking that there is mud and poop and it stinks. So, Mom, we need a blanket because the poor pig needs help. He's not doing good. So, of course, I grab a really old towel. And they cover the poor pig. They make a fence just for that pig so the other pigs wouldn't bug him. Mm-hmm. And they did it. They took wire. They took a piece of fence. So they did this whole contraption. They put a tarp on top of him between both of them.
Mm-hmm.
Because they wanted to make sure that the pig was going to be okay. And we're going to take care of him so he will recover. So just doing all that between both of them. The only thing I provided was the old towel.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's amazing. And it speaks to the value of the lessons that they've been learning these last couple years and that are going to translate and are going to carry them far in life, obviously, because there's so many people, you know, our age who aren't able to problem solve and provide solutions without guidance. And so all that trial and error and figuring it out is going to set them apart, I'm sure.
We hope so. We hope that they, you know, will look back and appreciate all the hard work at the farm. And like Nicholas, he counts the money when Sean comes from the market.
He's my accountant.
Seriously.
Yeah.
He is like,
"Dad, how much did you do today?" "I don't know. I haven't checked yet, Nicholas." He's like, "Well, whatever. Get out of it. Let's go."
Right.
How old are they now? What are they?
10 12. And 12?
10 and 12.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And they're involved in sports. So they're busy boys.
Now Nicholas does travel baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And he started football today.
Mm-hmm.
And, so we'll see how that goes.
And he did track.
He did track also.
For sure, too.
And then when football is over, he'll do basketball. And then when basketball is over, he'll do floor hockey.
Mm-hmm.
And Matthew's not so much into sports. He loves rock climbing.
Mm-hmm.
And he does like floor hockey. That's the one sport that
well,
he enjoys.
When you're from Buchanan.
Absolutely.
Yep. Let me tell you
but
something.
But Matthew's more of, he likes the four-wheelers and the dirt bikes and the snowmobiles. That's Matthew.
But about the going back to floor hockey, that is the best winter program ever. Mm-hmm. And I cannot believe there's not any more people in the country doing such a nice program for the kids, for them to do something during the winter. It requires minimal effort. And the kids don't even have to have special skills. It's such an inclusive sport. The equipment, it's like nothing.
Tennis shoes.
So... Mm-hmm.
Some eye protection. Yep.
It's really something that when you hear everybody saying, oh, we need to make to be more inclusive and more inclusive. Mm-hmm. What are more inclusive than floor hockey?
Mm-hmm.
That is a great, great opportunity for this town. And I wish all the other towns would do something like that.
Started in 1969. Now we have over, now we have over 300 kids participate in our floor hockey program every year for the last, going to be 40 years coming up. Wait, is that right? No, longer than that. Do the math.
Coming up on it.
50 years.
Two social science majors.
Oh, yeah. We're super good at math. So it's been going. Don't edit that out. Just leave it in. Leave it in. Yeah.
Mr. Mucci would be telling us to do push-ups.
He would be telling us to do push-ups right now. Yeah, it really is inclusive. And the cool thing about it, too, is it's very low barrier. For entry, and for a lot of the kids, it's the only sport they'll ever play, and so they play it up through eighth grade, and then, some of them continue to do other sports in high school, but for a lot of kids, it's in Buchanan, that's what they do, so.
We'll work that into a show sometime.
Oh, we certainly will. We can't talk about Buchanan without floor hockey.
That's right.
Wrote about that once, too.
I remember that post that you did on Facebook about floor hockey.
Mm-hmm.
I was bowling. It was so beautiful. And I think you need to put it somewhere again.
Yeah.
He was I was like, who is, I didn't know you at that time.
Yeah.
I'm like, who's writing this? This is so beautiful. About floor hockey and about your dad taking all the hockey sticks and taking you to the competitions. And it was just beautiful. I was like,
well, bowling. As a Buchanan native, that kind of runs through your blood, as your boys know now. It's just, we just had our 20th high school reunion, and we still talk about floor hockey. You know, 25 years later, remember that one game, the championship? And, it's just kind of one of those things in Buchanan. So, speaking of Buchanan, so we have this family that comes from the south side of Chicago. You find a house on Coveney, you buy pigs and chickens and goats and all kinds of stuff, and then you become part of the community. Like I said at the top, it's like you've always been here. So what was it like coming into a small community that's very tight-knit? Would you agree it's a tight-knit community?
Absolutely.
Yes. What was that like?
We were very welcomed, and I think something that helped a lot was Nicholas always has played baseball. So when we started, we came in late in the season. We signed up Nico, he was one of the last kids that was in pencil, like nobody knew him or anything. And we were lucky enough that we landed in Derek Riggins' baseball team.
Derek.
And then he took us under his wing, and through baseball, that was kind of like our way where we started meeting the town and the families. And so baseball was a very important part of our welcoming.
Yeah. And sports are a very integral part of Buchanan. And I think that's true with a lot of small towns. But, on a Friday night in fall, you're at the stadium. You're watching the football game. That's kind of what we do. What else is there to do, right? Besides raise cows and chickens and pigs. So... That's pretty cool that kind of became your entry. What were your first thoughts on this community? Because we anticipate that a lot of our listeners will have never been to Buchanan. We'll have listeners from all over the world, probably. Maybe some of them will want to come visit, now that we talked a little bit about it. But from the outside looking in, what was it like coming in? Like, what were your first impressions?
It's a very small town America. Mm-hmm. It's the quintessential small town America. Every time I go trick-or-treating during Halloween, I say to my children, this is what I have seen in the movies all my life. It's not made up. It's real. You don't understand because you have lived it all your life.
Yes.
I lived it through the movies. This is Hocus Pocus.
Mm-hmm.
You know the movie Hocus Pocus?
Oh, of course.
So this is just the whole little small town America with the leaves on the floor, the kids going door to door trick-or-treating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For me, is the highlight of the year, seeing the scarecrows on the streets. I love small town America. I love it.
Well, I think you just drive into town and it's just has that small town feel. I think for the most part, all the businesses you know, all the stores are filled with, you know, good businesses mm-hmm. that are thriving, and mm-hmm. you don't, you know, it's not one of those small towns you drive into and, you know, all the stores are, you know, empty and, you know, for sale or for lease or something. And I think it's just the people in general, like we've been talking, are just so welcoming and friendly. And, you know, you're driving down the street and you see somebody that you don't even, you know, you kind of know them, but you don't know what their name is, and you still mm-hmm. wave and smile anyways. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just kind of that small town feel. And it's totally different from, you know, where I grew up in Chicago. And I truly enjoy it. I love it.
Mm-hmm. And then when people ask me about the schools, and I have friends all over the country and all over the world, I tell them we are very, very, very lucky, because Buchanan Public Schools, I just don't have but good things to say about it. It's a great place for the kids, because it's not a very big school district. The teachers know every kid. And then now that Nicholas is in seventh grade, he's going to transition into a high school with all his friends. He's not going to have to face a high school with, I don't know, millions of students that he mm-hmm. have never seen in his life. He's going to go with all his friends to school. So I love that. And I love that sometimes every now and then the Easter Bunny makes it to home in a piece of paper, and Santa makes it in a piece of paper. Mm-hmm. And this politically correctness thing where the Santa and the Easter Bunny are not mm-hmm. part of our lives, when it's part of our lives. And so I love it. That still feels like a very traditional education mm-hmm. and they take care of the kids. At least that's my experience. And I think mm-hmm. we'll talk about our own experiences. But the Finn boys, I just don't have to say, but just good things. The mm-hmm. teachers they had encountered been wonderful. They have made them better kids. Matthew reads, he's going now to fifth grade, but last year he was in fourth grade and he's reading on an eighth grade level. Mm-hmm. So what else can I ask for?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, we're the products of Buchanan School, so we agree.
Mm-hmm. Right? I do. Yeah. You talk, just remind me, I was running traffic for a marathon or a half marathon in Baroda, Michigan. It's the 13-point wine for the wine, little wine country. Mm-hmm. The 13-point wine run. And somebody was standing next to me cheering. And I said, oh, are you here for family? And within 30 seconds, it shows up that she's the daughter of my first grade teacher from Buchanan. Of course, I went to Ottawa Elementary.
Go Otters.
Yeah. And just had a couple things in common really quickly and easily. And I think it's easy to make those kind of connections. I'm glad you guys have been making those kind of connections.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, speaking of, Derek Riggins is my cousin, so.
Oh, gee, I didn't know that. That's funny.
Hey, Derek. I am related to half the town, you know. So, yeah, well, I'm really glad that you guys, moved here. What did your family think? What did they think?
Yeah.
And what do they think now, you know, in terms of when you said, hey, by the way, I think I'm just going to be a farmer.
I think I probably had the conversation with everybody in my family asking them their opinion on it because yeah. I was just so nervous about mm-hmm. it. And just like anything else, if you're not nervous and you don't question it, you know,
right,
you better be careful.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, everybody was supportive. Everybody, you know, we talked very extensively about, you know, all the aspects of it. Uh-huh. And I'd say, you know, definitely supportive, and, you know, they're definitely behind us 100%, you know, along the way. It's funny because we end up in Chicago a lot of weekends just for family events. And every time something comes up, it's like, they really don't know how much we have to do here this yeah. weekend or every weekend for that yeah. matter. They don't have a clue. They don't know, you know, running into Chicago, you know, to where before it was 5 minutes over to my parents' house from mm-hmm. where we lived. Mm-hmm. And that was the same for all my siblings. To now it's, you know, an hour and 45 minutes to get there and an hour and 45 minutes back. It's 4 hours just traveling, you know, besides everything else that we have going on. So
yeah,
that's just one of those things that right. you got to do.
And the chickens and the pigs and the cows, they need to be fed during the weekend.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's not like you can clock out.
You have to be there in the morning and the afternoon.
Like, for example, yesterday we had a baptism and my father-in-law's birthday party. All in once. So we had to be in Chicago 10:45 in the morning, And by the time we have to leave the house at 9:45 Eastern mm-hmm. time. So we win an hour there. Yeah. Yay. Mm-hmm. And then by the time we came home, it was 10 o'clock at night. Uh-huh. And then it's a Monday. You have to go to work. And then by the time we get home, the kids have to do chores. You still have to go pick up the eggs, feed the animals. So you don't go to bed till like almost midnight after you're done with chores and making sure that everything gets done.
Yeah, then you're at dad's house having dinner and, you know, it's time to start cleaning up. And you look at the watch, it's like, oh my God, it's 8 o'clock and we're not going to get home until 10 o'clock.
Right.
We got to get out of here.
Right.
So it's, and you know, we love the family. It's a very, very close-knit family. I'm very lucky because with my family being in Colombia, it's very nice to have a family that is so close and we do a lot of things together. We love to have the nephews here. They come visit us quite often. And the kids enjoy having the cousins to come. We try to
help
do Halloween.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes, please. How many of you can come? And I'll show you how to do it. I'll take a day off.
No, it's funny because then all when the kids have their friends over for sleepovers, everybody knows that when they come to the fence, they all have to do chores.
Yes.
We have a ton of boots, so there are boots for everybody. That's not an excuse.
So I'm going to send my kids out there.
You can send them.
I'll send them with boots. Put them to work.
Yes.
Well, thanks for joining us and for telling us your story. You know, it's a pretty amazing story to come and just by, you know, fate, I guess as fate would have it, to be driving down Coveney Road, finding a house and then fast forward to running a pretty successful company, that is based on animals that you learned how to do it by the internet and the guys down at the feed mill.
Networking.
Yeah, it works. Uh-huh, it works. Working works, yep. And, you know, really a kind of a glimpse into small town America and what it's all about here in Buchanan. I know I talked about it on my old podcast for all you listeners here. That's why I always call it my beloved hometown. There's a little bit of magic here. So every week, you know, I'll probably bring some more people to the table and they can tell you a little bit about their part of the magic in Buchanan. So
I think it's good. We're starting where we're at to collect the stories that will be part of Buchanan's. Demonstrate, I guess, their timeline on Firekeeper's memories.
Yep.
We're starting where we're at, and I'm finding out there are a lot more people where we're at with great stories than I could have possibly been aware.
Yeah.
I appreciate you coming.
Yeah. Everybody has a story, right? All you just have to do is ask them. Now, there might be more of an abundance of incredible and amazing stories in Buchanan, but that's just... You'll just have to come visit. You'll just have to come
that's
see
what
us.
We think.
Well, that's the truth. So, thanks for joining us again this week. And we hope you'll join us next week when we have some new guests who will tell you a little bit more about their amazing stories as well.
All right. Keep the fire. We'll bring more stories. I don't even know if that's something I should keep saying.
Leave it in. Bye.